little personal anecdote, if you bear with me. My first hacker event was What the Hack. And when I entered, I saw an art exhibition that inspired me to this day. This was the first hacker event after 9/11. And there was a self-service security check to make sure that the people feel safe. But we didn't have the manpower and all the security personnel to check everybody. So there was a self-service metal detector, a self-service x-ray machine, and a place with a little shower curtain, some gloves, and some lubricant so you can check your cavities yourself just to make sure that you feel safe. It's a great example of how artists and art creations can inspire us, tell us what's happening in society. Last spring, I happened to visit an exhibition space in Bruges where the artist that we have here today, Dries de Porter, had an exhibition. I walked in and a voice told me, it's a man with a hat staring up in bewilderment. How that works is here to explain Dries de Porter.
Thank you very much for the nice intro. My name is Dries de Porter. I'm from Belgium. In this presentation, I will talk about my work as an artist. Most of my work is about privacy, cybersecurity, social media, and also artificial intelligence. I have a background in electronics. After I studied electronics, I went to an art school. And after art school, I worked 2 years for advertising as a concept provider, and now I work 8 years independently as an artist. In this presentation, I will explain my work and do little experiments during the presentation too. And then at the end of the presentation, I will show what I'm working on right now. So, one of my very first artworks was a crappy website. It was a website named 24hoursoundwave.com. And I developed this pretty quickly, and it was a website where you can listen to an audio file of 24 hours. And I recorded this audio file with a professional sound recorder around my belt, and it recorded my whole day as a student. So it recorded all the conversations that I had with other students, with my teachers. Also that day I went to a party, and you can listen to the whole file, an audio file of 24 hours. So one day in my life as a student. So I published this online on this website, and you are able to listen to the whole file, but some parts are deleted that are private for me, private for me. So you're not able to listen back to them, but you are able to buy them for a certain price. And the price is not based on the length, but it's based on the amount of value I give it to. After that, I made another project called Tinderin. It's about Tinder and LinkedIn. It's an artwork that existed out of 10 photo frames, and each photo frame existed out of 2 profile pictures of the same person. So one is from Tinder, a dating website, and the other one is from LinkedIn. Of course, I choose the most different ones. I published them unblurred on my website and in galleries, and the project blew up. It was on the Washington Post, Vice, Wired, Dazed and Confused, like a lot of websites, but it also ended up at blogs of lawyers. Because I didn't ask for permission to those people. This is one of my favorite articles about the project itself. It's a Belgian newspaper. They talk pretty bad about what I've done, and then at the bottom, they published a profile picture of myself without asking permission. So I thought I was telling a lot about my project. Then a year later, after it went viral, LG published this print campaign. Like, they stole the concept, like, you can see the white borders, it's the same concept, it's not the photos that I published, but they did exactly the same. And I felt like it was a bit wrong to do that from LG, so I looked up the advertising agency, because at the time they won 2 advertising awards with that. So this is like the credit list of those awards. Like, they have a lot of people that worked on those art projects, but my name was not in there. So it like felt a bit wrong, to be honest. So I sent the advertising agency an invoice of €10,000 to use my ID. So this is the email I sent, and then in the invoice it was 10,000 euro. They never replied on this email. They didn't pay me the 10,000 euro. I was not expecting that they will pay me the 10,000 euro. But then I published this screenshot on my social media, and then you have like a lot of reaction, like, "Hey, this advertising agency also stole my ID." And then later, I was more into, and still, and I work a lot about, I call them unprotected surveillance cameras. Those are cameras that are connected to the internet without a password or with like a standard password like admin and admin or 1234. And I use them in many of my art projects. Like the very first one was a project called Jaywalking. It's an interactive installation. It ends up in exhibitions or galleries. And it exists out of three buttons and three displays. And on the displays, you see cameras that are connected to the internet. I didn't place them there, I just got access to them. And I showed them in an exhibition space, and then I made software to detect if people are jaywalking. So if they cross the road when it's red, that is jaywalking. So if you are jaywalking, the system detects it, and then the visitor of the exhibition gets this question: "Would you like to report the jaywalker?" And then the person that is in front of this big button, he can presses the button, and then it will send an email to the closest police station with a screenshot of the jaywalker. And the email looks like this: "Hi, someone I just jaywalked at." Then you have the address of the camera, bye. And it's an email address that only exists for 10 minutes. I use a lot of Python, so it checks the main color of the traffic light. And then if it's red, it checks if someone is crossing the road. And then manually, it will send an email if someone is pressing. I mean, I try to find an email address of a police that is close to the camera. I sometimes make follow-up projects on projects. So this is called Jaywalking Frames. It's a wall of 22 meters full of jaywalking frames. So it's people that are jaywalking captured from all over the world with the software I developed and all those open cameras. In the exhibition, people can just walk around and watch them, but they can also buy them for a certain price. And the price you pay for each jaywalking frame is the same as the fine in that country. So this time, the money doesn't go to the police, it goes to me as an artist. So it depends on the law. Sometimes the price is high, sometimes it's really low. Sometimes I sell them in my web shop. So for Canada, you pay 87 euros. Voila. Sometimes I make really projects for the internet that are built for the internet. And it started with the browser game that I developed. It's called punchemoto.gallery. And I made a small video about this.
In 2012, Andrew Shannon seriously damaged a Claude Monet masterpiece hanging in the National Gallery of Ireland by punching it in front of stunned art lovers. In December 2014, the story made international headlines again as he was sentenced to 5 years in prison for his actions. This shocking act of violence drew mixed reactions on the internet. While most agreed that attacks on artwork were terrible, some felt strangely attracted to this surprising and unusual incident. We have to admit, we shared this fascination. Introducing punchamonet.gallery, a browser-based 3D game where you can virtually punch a Monet painting. Visitors find themselves in a gallery space similar to the National Gallery of Ireland. Players are given two controls, moving and punching, so they can walk up to the virtual Monet and punch it until it's completely destroyed. As the painting is repeatedly punched, a running tally adds up the dollar value of the damage being done. The simulation clearly struck a nerve on the internet. Tens of thousands of people chose to experiment with violence against art, resulting in a total of 200,000 players after the first week. More than 50,000 people shared the project on social media. For some, virtually punching a priceless artwork was cathartic, a chance to explore a taboo behavior without doing any real damage. The project was featured on a number of important creative and art outlets, and by prominent gaming websites such as Kotaku, Killscreen, and Game Trailers. Try it now at punchamonet.gallery.
And for me, this was really the reason to build more on the internet. I made this together with two friends, and then I built like non-views. It's a Chrome extension that changes the amount of YouTube views and the amount of people that didn't watch the YouTube video in the world. So it's the amount of people in the world minus the people that watched the video. And a lot of people install this. This is another game. It's called Airbnb Host. It's not a collaboration between me and Airbnb Host, Airbnb, but it uses data from Airbnb. So what you needed to do is to guess the host of the room. So it uses all data from Airbnb. You type in your city, and then you see one image, and then you need to guess the host of the Airbnb space. Airbnb was not really happy about this, so they sent me like angry emails, and then I added like a little button, book this room, so there's some traffic going back to Airbnb, but still the lawyers were sending a lot of emails, and then I placed the project offline. I made this also together with David Subkanau. Another project that started online, it's a scratch ticket. It's a scratch ticket where you're not able to win money, but you're able to win up to 25,000 fake followers for your Instagram and Twitter account. You can really win them. I'll show this later how this works. First, it was on my web shop, then exhibitions trying to invite me, and then I built this. You can buy them in my web shop, and it's sometimes in exhibitions or galleries. I start building those machines. Now they end up in those Instagram museums. I also made a following project on this. It's called Quick Fix.
Quick Fix is an art installation that makes it possible to buy likes or followers in just a few seconds. This is how it works. Choose your product. Pay the cost. Enter your Instagram username, and you're done. You will have the likes or followers delivered in just a few seconds. Check your phone and start celebrating success. Quick Fix. Influencers love it.
So this is the first machine that I built. With this, you are able to instant buy those likes and fake followers. It was exhibited all over Europe, also North America. This is in my studio. This is how I ship them. I like to make... This is inside. There's a lot of bad cable management. I use a lot of Raspberry Pi in my project in combination with Arduino. This is like a debug screen. And this is the new machine. It does exactly the same, but now it has like a touch screen where you are able to buy them. It was part of the Glassroom. It's a really cool exhibition organized by Firefox about privacy, and it travels over the world. Let's do a little experiment. We will choose a cat from Instagram, and let's give it 10,000 extra likes, and then I will explain how that works. So for today, I'm on Instagram here. I opened hashtag supercutecats. Let's choose a cat that deserves 10,000 extra likes. And let's maybe this one or... Oh, this one has 6 likes. Okay, let me refresh. And now I need to open a little program. This is exactly the same as Quick Fix, but it's built for presentations. So I said like 10,000, let's do 12,000. 1, 2, 3. Then it asks link to the post. I copy the link here, so now it's copied. I place it back to my program. And then I will explain how this works. So if everything, okay, that looks good. And now it will go slowly. At the end of the presentation, I will go back, and then hopefully the cat will have more than what did I do? 12,000 likes? Yeah. So, okay. It will start later on. It will start. I will check in the middle of the presentation. Normally, it should already start. But what's happening now, I have more than... I have a lot of fake Instagram accounts, and I can control them. So it's like basically bots. And they start following account, liking account. I can... do whatever they want. Okay, this is really slow. Let me Backup. let's do 10,000. 1, 2, 3. It will start. Let's check later. I will wait 10 minutes and then let's see if it works. Let's go first, show some other projects. I made Surveillance Paparazzi. It's based on, it was inspired by a service of Microsoft. They have a service of where you can detect celebrities in images. So you send it an image and then it will say like, okay, it's this celebrity. It's like, it was able to select 250,000 celebrities. So I made this box. It's a box that is connected to a lot of unprotected surveillance cameras. There is a lot of Raspberry Pis, and it will check cameras all over the world, but especially in Hollywood, to check if there are celebrities in the image. So it's like constantly running. It checks for faces. If it finds a face, it will check this service. It's a pretty old project, but then it showed like the first. So for Microsoft, I get the name back and then a confidence level, and then it will get some extra information from Wikipedia. So it never found a real celebrity. They're all lookalikes. Yeah, this is Surveillance Speaker, the artwork you talked about that described you. So this is a speaker and camera and a motor attached to each other, and it will constantly move. It will check the, most of the time it's an exhibition space, and it will check around. And out of the speaker, you will hear what the camera is seeing. So it will try to do that in a really detailed way. So it's also a pretty old project. So in the beginning, it like had this really typical technical, like computer voice. But I always update it when it's like in a new exhibition. I will update it to the latest technology. So now it will describe what people are wearing, and it goes into detail. So this is one of the last times I exhibited in Belgium. Trophy camera. Let's describe this. This is my first work about artificial intelligence. It doesn't look like a camera, but it's a photo camera. And it can only take award-winning pictures. So it's trained on the World Press photo. This is like a photo competition. And if you take a photo with it, it will look, it checks how much it looks like a World Press photo. If it looks more than 90% as a World Press photo, it will upload it to a website, trophy.camera. And people can play around with it. This is an award-winning photo. And I think why this is an award-winning photo, because a lot of those World Press photos are war pictures. So if you act like you're dead, or if you act like you have a weapon, you will have a higher chance to get selected. This is Die With Me. This is my first app that I developed. And it's an app which you can only use when you have less than 5% battery in your phone. If you have less than 5% battery in your phone, you can use it, and then you end up in a chat room with other people having less than 5% battery on their phone. So you can see each other's battery status, people are chatting a lot, there's a lot of spelling mistakes, it's one big chat room. You can also see if someone is charging. So I also made a little video about this.
Everyone knows the struggle of a dying phone. Die With Me is an app you can only use when you have less than 5% battery. Die together in a chat room on your way to offline peace.
So this is a Die With Me, and it was super hard to get it in the Apple App Store because Apple checks everything. It checks your concept, it checks your code, and this is the platform where you upload it, and this was always like the reason, like, hey, we don't want this app in our Apple App Store. That was super frustrating, to be honest, But then I think it took me 3-4 months. Then they accepted the app in the Apple App Store on my birthday, and the app went immediately viral.
Low battery, no problem. You can still chat it up. I've got just the app for you in tonight's daily.com.
Yeah. So it was like everywhere. I was super excited about this, to see a lot of people using it, chatting with low batteries. A lot of YouTubers talked about it, and big websites talked about it. That was super cool to see. And then also Wall Street Journal, and then it was the number one in the Apple App Store. And I was so surprised about that. That was so cool to see. But then after a few days, a few weeks, people starting to copy my app. Like the first copy was called Die With Me in the Google Play Store. I also had my app in the Google Play Store, but it had like exactly the same name. And for me, that was kind of frustrating. Like, it's exactly the same concept. They developed a new app, but yeah, it felt wrong, because at the time, my app wasn't paying app, and they had like a free app, but they had advertising in their app. So they were making money. So if you typed in Die With Me, there was like a lot of people going to the free app, of course, and not downloading my app. And I sent them an angry email like, hey, can you remove it in 24 hours? They didn't remove it, but they changed the name from Die With Me to Live With Me. And then I had other copies, like you had Die With Me, less than 15%. Like exactly the same app design, but the only difference was that you were able to use it for less than 15%. This is a mix between, this is called Last Date, Die Together Dating. It's a mix between Die With Me and Tinder. Lost, and those are all copies. Alive With Me. In an exhibition, I don't like to show apps. So I made this. It's like a neon lamp, and next to it, you have a screen where you can see what are people telling to each other if they have a low battery. Sometimes I update it. Now you can be verified. You don't need to pay anything for it. There's also like a 5% update. So now you can pay €5 in the app, and then you can start using it from 10% battery instead of 5% battery. On Black Friday, I doubled the price of my app. So you pay twice the amount of money to get it, only that one day. So this is a bit about Die With Me. I'm really curious about the viral post about the cats. Let's go back. This is not refreshed yet. Now I'm refreshing. Okay, now we are already at 2,000 likes. thank you. I will go back to this on at the end of the presentation. Yeah. Then let's explain this. 24-hour sunrise, sunset. It's an artwork, or I see it as an artwork. It's a console. I developed this during Corona. I did already a lot about open cameras, and I wanted to show something positive about this camera, or something beautiful. And I made this. It's like a console with two HDMI outputs, and it always shows a sunrise and a sunset somewhere happening in the world. So I made a selection of open cameras that can also be like a ski camera, or that it was showing a bit of sky. And then the system automatically checks if there's a sunrise or sunrise, and then it shows it. At the time, I had more time during Corona, so I started developing my own PCBs. So this is Arduino on top of a custom-made PCB. And this was my first step. This is quite easy to develop PCBs. But then I had some experience in making PCBs, and I developed a product. It's called Short Life. And it's a really personal clock. It's a clock to remind you that life is short. And it shows how much percent of your life that is already completed based on your life expectancy in your country. So it uses data from the World Health Organization. They have numbers of how old someone gets in a specific country. So if you order it through my web shop, you need to fill in just your birthday, your country, where you've been born, and then it checks the average age. So it doesn't take into account if you smoke or if you sport a lot. And it shows how much of your life that is already completed. So I made different versions about this. This is like the one of the second, this is the latest version. I use it on my next to my bed, but I discovered a lot of people are using it in their workspace. I was quite surprised about that. I'm still always developing more editions. So it's an edition of 1 million, so I will maximum sell 1 million of short lives. Someone sent me this picture. It was a person tattooed on their arm in the same font, or like this typical font, and it was at a special moment in that person's life, and the person sent me a long story, and then this image. It was so beautiful. Sometimes I receive this, hey, can I make a short life for my dog? And then I do this. This was a few months ago, and currently I'm at 42%. This is how much the age people buy it. So most people buy it at 39. voila. I will skip this one, or let's go through quickly. So this is again about open cameras. And this is, a lot of those cameras sometimes have a motor attached to it. So this is me controlling a camera somewhere in France with a PlayStation controller. So I can physically move the camera from left to right. It's actually controlling just a web server in the camera itself. And I made like gamification. This is like, it uses a lot of custom hardware, a lot of Raspberry Pis, and you can play around with cameras from all over the world with a PlayStation controller. This was also, this is the lookouts. And then I have the Flemish scrollers. Oh, it's always so hard to pronounce this. The Flemish scrollers. And I made a small video about this.
The Flemish Scrollers is an art installation tagging Belgian politicians when they use their phone on the daily live streams. This is how it works. Every meeting of the Flemish government in Belgium is live streamed on a YouTube channel. When a live stream starts, the software is searching for phones and tries to identify a distracted politician. When a politician is too long on the phone, a video of the person is then posted to a Twitter and Instagram account with the politician tagged. This is all done with the help of artificial intelligence and face recognition. The Flemish Scrollers was featured in important news outlets. A few Belgian politicians reacted in the media. The art installation was premiered on April 1st, 2022 in Lausanne, Switzerland. Please stay focused.
Yeah, so this is the Flemish Scrollers. First, I made the software, and then later I made this big server rack, 19-inch server rack. For me, it was also, I think, nice to show the hardware behind this software or behind artificial intelligence. So I made like this custom rack where people can watch the process, can watch the results. They can walk around. Makes a lot of noise. I mean, it's a big server. They can see the graphical cards if they walk around the installation. So this was the Flemish Scrollers. This was an image a lot of people shared. This is how it tweets, "Dear distracted, please stay focused." Those are kind of the tweets. Made a lot of press. And the day after, they changed something. Like the camera was, the live stream was offline for a few hours the next day. But they also had like more close-ups in the live stream. So you didn't have like those wide open live stream anymore. Border Birds, this is another project. I made this together with my sister. She's a photographer, but it uses cameras, again, unprotected surveillance cameras, but this time at borders. So it's basically birds that are crossing borders of two countries that are in conflict with each other. So I found cameras that are open, that are protecting borders, and then I used YOLO to detect if a bird. If it detects a bird, it saves it as an image, and then my sister made a selection of, I don't know, 30, I guess. And then I printed them out in those photo frames, and people can buy it. This is basically, this is my favorite, because this key, you can see the barbed wire, and the photo is really big the bird is really big in front of the image. And half of the profit goes to the Red Cross. Then I have the follower. I will be short about this. This was a video. It's again about open cameras, so and social media. So first, I found cameras where people are taking a lot of selfies and are just basically a lot of where I found cameras where are people taking a lot of pictures, mostly their touristic spots. So what I then is and then I scraped Instagram and I with the location of that camera, and then the hard part was to combine them. So I made like a video where you can see on the one side an Instagram photo, and then you can see how that Instagram photo was taken. Now in the video it looks like it's like, I mean, it's there's still some manual work and there's a lot of mistakes, but this was, I published this video and it has just the results. It found also some influencers, published this online, and then the New York Times was on it. They went to the cameras, the locations, they interviewed some people, they went to my studio. There was like a lot of, also a big copyright claim on it. And then I think a few years later, a few years later, I tweeted this, like, remember my project, a follower? So weird to be here. I was at the location where the camera was, and it was just like, hey, here, this is the camera. This is also a really open camera. And then someone tweeted in the replies like, hey, I see you, you're there. So that was really interesting to see. Then I have shirts. Every year I try to produce a product. One year it was Short Life, and 1 year it was shirt. It's a shirt that I'm selling in my web shop, and the first shirt is named 0001. So every time if this shirt is sold, the price gets €1 higher. So my web shop automatically adjusted. So it started with 0001 and then it goes up. So this shirt is €4 and the next shirt will be €5. I'm starting to sell them. Now we are at this number. And there were some interesting things that happened during this project, because suddenly it was really fast at shirt 60. And then I saw my visitors going up, but the shirts were selling less. And I was like, oh, what's happening here? Is there going something wrong? But actually everyone was waiting for shirt 69. So if shirt 69 was sold, it was going really fast, going to the numbered 100, and then just before 100, it was slowing down again, and now we are at this number. Then we have Recharge. This is one of my latest installations. It's a big installation. 40 people can lay down, chill, relax into those seats, and they can charge their phone. But they can only charge their phone if their eyes are closed. So if their eyes are closed, the phone is charging. If their eyes are open, the phone is not charging anymore. And there's like a lot of cameras inside of the ring. And I think there's something really poetic about this. Like, you charge yourself while you're charging your phone. So I made this. I had to make a lot of software. And this is, this is a few sketches, behind the scenes things. This is the final product. It uses one computer with one really expensive graphical card to process all the cameras. I had to test a lot of cameras. And everything is developed in Python. And it uses Google media pipe offline. It doesn't send any data to Google. But it's an open source project that works really good at detecting the how open your eyes are. I also made like a small version only for one person, and this is working with the Raspberry Pi. Then to finish, this is my latest project. It's called browser.dating. It's a dating website I developed. You can upload your browser history, your full browser history, and then it will make a match with someone else's browser history based on your interest or what you search, if you're a lot online at night, and then it will have some fun facts about your both browser history. So it will never share the other's the other person's browser history, but you have some insight what you have in common. So this, you can use it. And then it has also like Dries de Poorter ads. It's like advertising of my own products. So it's only like about Die With Me and Short Life. Yeah, this is how, this is browser dating, my latest project. Then I would love to talk about unfinished work. This is like a really old idea that I just picked up again because I never finished it, but it's like my kind of dream to finish this one day. So it's thin flags outside. They're just naturally in the wind. But one flag is going against the wind. So yeah, I know it sounds difficult, and it is, but now I'm trying to hide like motors into the flag, so it's really silent. I work with wind pressure, and yeah, but I fail a lot. So if anyone wants to work on this or help me, I can use some help. Let's check the Instagram post again. So the last time I refreshed, where we're at 2000. Oh, go slowly. But it will get there. So this is the username. It's a bit slow today, but yeah, we already had a jump of almost 3,000. Let's go back to the keynotes. Thank you for listening. This was really an honor to be here. And I don't know if we have time for questions, but please ask. Thank you for listening.
And yes, we have time for questions. Please line up to the microphone situated at the front here if you have any questions. Yes, and please talk directly into
Hello.
The microphone.
Hello. Thank you. Very inspiring. Very Thank cool you. What you did, and nice presentation also. I actually have two questions. The first one is, how do you get your ideas? Do you just dream them up, or do you consider what people would find inspiring or strange? What's your criteria for getting ideas?
So for ideas, I think I note down a lot in my phone, and basically they're all bad ideas, what I note down, or sometimes it's like an insight. I think a pretty good example was like I was lost in a city because my phone died and I was not able to find my hotel back. And I found that really inspiring, having a low battery. And I noted down an app which you can use with a low battery. So that's how it started. But then this note was a year on my phone, and I didn't know, it took me more than a year, I guess, like, what can this app do? Like, I was really thinking like dating with low batteries or like games. But then one day I had like the idea, ah, I think the best concept is just to have as a chat room. And then I develop it, and then it's like, okay, this is really the final concept, and then try to build it as fast as possible. So my tactic is like, I note down a lot of insights or bad ideas, and what I discovered is also I combine a lot of bad ideas, and then sometimes they can be like a better idea. Yeah. So this is like kind of my way of working, but it's a trashy. Yeah, I go to this bad ideas list a lot, and then I try to combine them, and this is a bit how I work.
Like collect it and then let it brew for
yes,
a while.
Yes, yeah, sometimes.
Refine.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. And a second question. I saw you made a product, and I also make electronics projects, and sometimes I consider selling them, and then I get scared that they catch on fire in someone's house.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm liable, so I never dare to do it. How do you deal with it? Is it on your mind, or do you do very safe electronics? Are they CE and everything?
I send the schematics to some friends, and they try to review it. This is a bit how I work, but yeah. And for example, like I don't build any power supplies. So this is like I ship it with an existing power supply. So there's some safety.
I see. So then you have the most of the risk covered, and the other one you take for granted.
Yes, exactly.
I see. Yeah. Okay. Thank you. Yeah. Thanks again for the presentation.
Thank you for the questions.
Thank you for the awesome presentation.
Thank you.
You have some young hackers and potentially artists. How did you get from studying electronics into the art school? Like, what was, what were you thinking about?
Okay, this is a long story, I guess, but I was in electronics, and at the end of that study, I really wanted to do something with creativity. At the time, my sister was a photographer, so she went to an art school. And that inspired me to also went to this art school. They lured me to, there was like a course called Media Arts. It was like combining, was like kind of a maker, hacker, coding, arts course, I guess. And I thought that was really interesting, so I took that. But I was really concerned, like, okay, how can I make money with this? Like at the end of my art school, I was like, okay, how can I, now I'm in the real world, so I need to make some money. So then an advertising agency invited me, and that was like the completely opposite. Like I was then suddenly, it was all about money and budgets, and I was in those two worlds, advertising and media arts. And I think now if you look through my work, it's like a combination of both. I worked more and more when I was in advertising, and then really slowly I had some income from my art practice. Like I was building more products, I was showing more exhibitions. So then slowly, and it didn't feel as a risk to change from working for advertising to work for myself. And now I'm doing this, I think 8+ years doing this. Yeah. Any other questions? Yeah. If anyone wants a scratch ticket, I have a few with them, with me, so I can give away some scratch tickets.
And we have a few more minutes for questions. So if we can keep the, if you can line up, if you have another question, we can have a few more. Yeah. Thank you.
A lot of your ideas go viral. Do you do anything to make them viral?
What is important is for me is that I can explain them in one sentence, and I build them so it's accessible for a broad audience. So also on my website, I describe them really shortly. I make a video with it, and then I post it on Reddit, on Hacker News. But I don't try to push it too hard. So now today I show the successful projects, or most of them. Sometimes it's my kind of goal for example, Die With Me was really my goal to go viral. But sometimes it's not like I think I have two kind of projects, like the internet projects like Die With Me, and then I have the surveillance speaker. This is really like built for exhibitions, and it was a lot in exhibitions, but it was never went viral. So I try to build them a video, short text, short title, so a lot of people can understand it. I was in art school, and they didn't teach me it there, but I was like really frustrated, like, hey, this is an artwork, and you first need to read those two books to understand this artwork. And I was like, really, this is now, I saw art differently. People need to understand it quickly and easy, and I think sometimes that's why my projects go viral, because they are easy to explain, and
And one more question. Do you jaywalk?
Sometimes I hope I will get a fine. So it's a nice story. Fuck, I got fined. No, but depends on the country, I guess. If I jaywalk, depends on the law.
Thank you.
Thank you for your questions.
What is art for you?
Wow.
In 3 minutes.
I really. I can't. I'm not able to answer this. I don't have an answer on this, I guess.
Okay. Then other question. You mentioned a successful project. What does successful project mean? And do you have any that like your personal favorites that were not as popular?
I think that's for everyone different, a successful project, but most of the time, if it's like an internet project, if a lot of people are trying it, and if it's like those kind of artworks that are built for exhibitions, is that in the next 2 years, a lot of exhibitions request that work. So I think that's, for me, my kind of success.
Hi there. Hi. It's very interesting that you're using all these open cameras, and I was wondering, how do you deal with the open cameras, for instance, in your project with the sunrise and the sun going down? What if the cameras are going down, for instance? How do you deal with these kind of hiccups?
So for 24-hour sunrise, sunset, it just it goes to the next camera. It checks for that specific work. It checks the closest camera. So sometimes there's like it shows like already it's still dark, or I can add cameras, I can remove cameras. If the camera is too long offline, it will remove it out of the list. So yeah, this is how I handle that.
And in line of this question, how do you deal with maintenance on the longer term for all of your projects?
I'm struggling a lot with that. Every time if I make a project, I have more maintenance work. So sometimes I shut down a project and I post a screenshot on my website. But yeah, sometimes I have to do this also with domain names. One day I had like paying more for domain names than my rent. So I was like, okay, I need to shut down some domain names. So,
okay, thank you.
One final question.
The jaywalking project looked very nice, and I think it also looks very tempting to press a big button like How many people see it and then press the button or don't?
Yeah, at the beginning of this project, I didn't monitor it. I think the last couple of years, I just monitor if they press or not. And then it was also at the time a lot exhibited in Belgium and in the Netherlands. And it was in the Netherlands, there were like more, they were pressing more than in Belgium. But I don't have really good numbers on it, but now I save it. In the beginning, I didn't save anything of those type of data. Thank you for your question.
All right, thank you, everybody. Thank you. Another big round of applause for Dries de Porter.